All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Snakes on the Diamond podcast. This is going to be a special audio-only episode in which we talk about the Rocky series with Rockies writer Evan Thompson, and then we'll do a preview of the New York Yankees series with Wes Beyer. So joining us today to start is Evan Thompson, former Diamondbacks beat writer. Now he writes for the Rockies. So, Evan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay, Michael. Thank you for having me.
So looking at the series, obviously there's a clear discrepancy of kind of where the two teams are at the current stages of building. Diamondbacks coming off a National League championship, whereas the Rockies are kind of coming up from the rock bottom. Where would you equate the Rockies kind of compared to the last 3 years of where the Diamondbacks have kind of built their way back into contention?
I would say they're around where the 2022 team was, with the exception being the Diamondbacks had a better pitching ace. Zach Gallen in 2022 was better than Kyle Freeland is right now. Not to say Freeland's bad, it's just Gallen was that much better.
And you look kind of like the Rockies rotation. Like, I think Ryan Feltner had actually fairly decent day on Sunday. Like, even though he gave up the 5 runs, 2 of them came because of a drop fly ball, and then the next batter smoked the ball into the corner. How has Feltner looked this spring for the Rockies?
Unfortunately, I never saw him in the spring. Every game he pitched, I wasn't there. But he looked pretty good yesterday, that's for sure. His defense let him down. Bud Black, the manager, said after the game, Feltner deserved better than the number line looked, because you saw that first inning had several defensive miscues, and then of course the drop fly ball by a guy who normally doesn't drop fly balls. Nolan Jones is one of the better defenders in the National League, but he had a rough day yesterday.
So flipping on the Diamondbacks side, where do you think the Diamondbacks have a legitimate shot to make another postseason run, just looking at them through 4 games?
They do. It's hard to say where they can be, given that they are so much better than the Rockies are right now. But, you know, it's hard to say what happens with the Dodgers. The Dodgers, once again, are loaded with talent. What's let them down since they won their World Series in 2020 has been the shape of their pitching staff going into the postseason each year. It was a mess last year. But outside of the Dodgers, you know, Diamondbacks are right up there with everybody else.
So you kind of look at, obviously, I think winning for the Diamondbacks, winning division is going to be a tough task. But look, since there's 3 wild card spots, obviously, I think the National League West could possibly send 3 teams to the playoffs this year, depending on what happens in San Diego and San Francisco. Although I do think the Central is going to be more interesting this year than it is last year. The Cubs obviously did a lot to their offseason. Milwaukee's always going to be good, no matter how many players they trade off the roster. And the Reds obviously are kind of like the dark horse team to be the 2024 version of the Diamondbacks, or at least what everyone's predicting.
Well, the Reds are athletic. The Reds can run like crazy. Honestly, it's a 3-horse race between the Cubs and Brewers and Reds. I saw the Cubs today. They certainly are beatable. But, you know, the Brewers played very well against the Mets over the weekend. And then, I'd have to go with the Reds probably up the 3, but it's going to be close.
All right. So going kind of pivoting back to the Rockies, what's kind of the sense that they're trying to accomplish this year? What, obviously it takes a while. It's going to take a couple of years at least to come back from 100 losses to competing for a playoff spot.
Well, the main thing is just continuing to develop their up-and-coming talent. You've got Jones, I mentioned before, Brenton Doyle, won a gold glove in center field last year, and deservedly so. You know, Ryan McMahon is still in his late 20s. Brendan Rodgers, same age. They were missing Rodgers for most of the season last year, so having him healthy for the full year will definitely help. Then you saw young Ezekiel Tovar, who just signed his contract extension, you know, so developing those guys will be a big thing, but their biggest hole is starting rotation.
Yeah, and so, it's definitely difficult to develop starting pitching in that environment, because sometimes when you're pitching at high altitude, you can make the right pitch, and sometimes the batter just beats you, kind of thing.
There's that. There's what also might, the case of Coors Field having the deeper fences to make up for the ball carrying more, so the outfielders have to play deeper, and a lot of times it ends up being death by paper cut, where you just dump a bunch of base hits in front of the outfield, and the inning just goes on and on like a merry-go-round.
Yeah, I feel like that's an underrated part of Coors Field that nobody really takes into account, is the fact that it has maybe the largest outfield in the game. I think Detroit's Comerica Park definitely is up there. Chase Field, also another giant outfield. I do feel like the Rockies have done a better job of kind of building their team around that. Like, for example, Doyle obviously is going to be probably going to be a Gold Glove finalist for the next 10 years if he can hit. And then Nolan Jones can do some pretty crazy stuff on the field.
The Coors Field does have the biggest outfield, because the other parks you mentioned there are much shorter down the lines than Coors is. And then, you know, remember Comerica Park, they also brought in the fence in center field. It's not as deep as it used to be. Coors is definitely very deep in center. And then their two corners, left center and right center, aren't marked, but they're 430 feet. So, yeah, getting Doyle to cover a lot of ground there was a big move for them. It was a wise move. And you mentioned Jones. He had double-digit outfield assists last year. I don't know why people run on him, honestly. In fact, earlier today, the Cubs weren't going to run on him, and then the ball squirted under Jones's glove in the game that just ended, and it ended up going all the way to the wall. What would have been a single to load the bases ended up clearing the bases on a Little League home run.
Yeah, I think he was charged with two errors on the play, a throwing error that allowed Morel to score from third.
Correct. He had the fielding error, and then throwing the ball in, the throw went wide, and Morel was able to score.
So, yeah, I kind of look at, obviously, the Rockies are kind of in a little bit of a youth movement, obviously. Zach Veen, Yankiel Fernandez, Adel Amador are going to be guys I think you're going to see in Colorado in 2024. I'm not sure where their pitching is at farm system-wise, but I feel like they're going to have a much more athletic lineup a year from now. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, they'll have a more athletic lineup. The guys that are coming up are very athletic players. The area they obviously the most improvement in is their pitching staff.
Yeah, because I've caught a little bit of Fernandez in spring training, and every time I watch him at bat, my thought at the end of it is, this guy's going to be a problem. Like, he barreled up an Andrew Selfrank curveball that was headed for the dirt in a spring training game against the Rockies, and then in the spring breakout game, he actually golfed out a Yelber Diaz slider, and Diaz was striking everyone out in that game. And I think that's kind of the things that have caught my attention with him.
That's a fair assessment, definitely. I didn't see the spring breakout game, so you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, well, I didn't actually cover the game, but I was watching it on the broadcast, and it's like, and I was impressed. Obviously, I was impressed with some of the arms that came out there. The Rockies, I think one area the Rockies have done a very good job of, in my opinion, is rebuilding their bullpen. Like, they have some very good arms in their bullpen, and there's a big reason why the D-backs had a tough time scoring after the starter came out of the game.
Oh yeah, their relief pitchers are very good. Nick Mears has looked great so far. Jalen Beeks got some huge outs in some high pressure situations. Justin Lawrence, when he's on, is absolutely nasty. He has that down under pitching motion, and he has a slider that can sweep away from a righty. He has a sinker that'll dive down and in on a righty, and then he has a changeup that falls off a table. So when he's on, he is very tough to hit. Now, he had a stretch last year where he had a tough time getting guys out for about 2 weeks at the end of August, beginning of September. But when he was on, he was among the best in the National League. They also have Tyler Kinley back, who 2 years ago, before he hurt his elbow, had pitched scoreless appearances in 23 of his 25 outings. His ERA was under one. Now you know how I feel about reliever ERA, but still 23 scoreless outings out of 25. He gave up two earned runs all year. And then he went on the injured list with his bad elbow. He looks good to start 2024 as well. He's their setup man.
So when kind of just looking at the Rockies as a whole, it's so you would say basically kind of the rotation is the last piece for them to kind of figure out before they kind of get back into, I guess you can say, competing for playoff spot, maybe the division if everything goes their way.
That would be it. Yes. Now, if you look at the five starters they have right now in the rotation, if you look at their ERA minus, remember lower the better with ERA minus, 100's league average. Every single one of them was at or over 100. Every single one. And so that's going to be a big thing, is keeping runs off the board. And remember, ERA minus is also park adjusted. So even factoring in the run scoring environment at Coors Field, they're still over league average. You take a look at Kyle Freeland, their ace. He pitches on the Diamondbacks. Where is he in the rotation if everyone's healthy?
Fifth starter.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if he would. I don't know if he'd beat out Fott for the fifth starter role.
Right. Exactly. He'd be competing with Fott for the fifth starter role. What would give Freeland an advantage is he's a left-hander. The Diamondbacks only have Rodriguez as a lefty, but.
They just signed Montgomery too. So.
Oh, but yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Montgomery is left-handed. Thank you. But put Kyle Freeland with the Dodgers. Does he make the rotation at all? You know?
No.
That's their thing. And again, I don't mean any disrespect to Kyle Freeland by saying all this. Kyle Freeland is a major league quality pitcher. He was on Team USA for a reason at the World Baseball Classic last year. But he's not as good as the other guys in those top two teams.
Yeah, Freeland would be a four or five starter at worst on like 25 teams right now.
Right.
So, what's your thoughts on where you think the Diamondbacks could go this year?
Probably second place, unless the Dodgers have a series of catastrophic injuries, which of course I'm not wishing on them. I wouldn't do that to anyone, but unless they have a catastrophic series of injuries, I don't see the Diamondbacks beating them out for the division title. But I have them second place, getting a wild card. They could win the division round or wild card round, then the division round.
Yeah, well, if the D-backs get into the wild card, there's probably a good chance they'll see the Dodgers get in the division series. And you know, with the division series against division opponents, throw out all the numbers out the window kind of situation. That's what happened last year with the National League playoffs.
There was that, but remember also the Dodgers pitching staff was a mess. That was the biggest issue in that series. Now, granted, the Diamondbacks did a very good job shutting down Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. But again, I mean, the biggie in that series was the Dodgers were climbing uphill the whole time just because their pitching staff was a mess.
All right. So thanks for coming on, Evan. Hope to have you back later this season. Obviously the D-backs play the Rockies four separate series this year.
Thanks for having me.
Two at home, two.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say two each, two at home, two away. I think the D-backs play the Rockies again on April 8th through 10th.
They do.
At Coors Field, so. We'll see how that series goes.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Michael.
All right. For the second half of this podcast, we're going to get right into that Yankee series. But before you do that, make sure to subscribe to the Snakes and the Diamond podcast here on YouTube. Or if you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening in on your favorite podcasting platform, make sure to give us a 5-star review and leave a comment down below what you love about this podcast. Make sure also to leave a like and give a comment what you think is going to happen in the Yankees series. So we're going to bring Wes back in and we're going to preview the Yankees series. So Wes, big series coming up. Would you agree?
I mean, the Yankees are always a big series in general. I mean, just from the fact that, even a homestand, we're going to see a bunch of Yankees fans. That's hopefully that most of those ticket sales are Diamondbacks fans. Diamondbacks fans need to show up for these games. You know, it's a lot easier to, you know, make a World Series run when you actually have your fans showing up. So if you haven't bought a ticket, you can usually find one, you know, so get on it. It's a big series. The Yankees are a little in, like, there's some injuries, and we're not going to see Gerrit Cole, but they're coming off. They're coming into the series hot. They've won 4 games. Juan Soto, I think, is an incredible addition to that Yankees offense. But they're definitely, this is not the Yankees of, you know, the the late 90s, early 2000s, or even, you know, some of their more recent, you know, better teams. Like, they weren't that, the last season was the worst season that they've had in, you know, probably as long as I've been alive.
The Yankees have not been under 500 in my lifetime, and I'm 30 years old.
Yeah. So it's one of those things. I think it's like in your lifetime, not mine.
Their last losing season was 92.
They're not a team correctly. They're not a team to be underestimated. I mean, when 500 is a bad season, like, this is the worst season they had was last season. They were still 500. It says a lot to me. Like, I mean, this is not a team to be underestimated. Juan Soto is an incredible addition to their, you know, to their offense. Just to, you know, I don't care. I mean, a lot of people want to hate on Juan Soto, but he is more than likely a future Hall of Famer. As long as he stays healthy, I cannot see or has some crazy scandal. I can't see him not making the Hall of Fame. It really just seems unlikely. Let's break it down with the rotation. We're going to see a rookie, Luis Gil, in the first game. He's the fifth starter.
Fifth starter that got called up once Cole went down. So he was actually sent down before the injury happened. So that means he's basically their sixth starter entering the season, more or less. Yeah. So kind of a little bit of a rundown on Gil. Gil is a high velocity pitcher who spent most of last season on the IL. I think putting a pitch, stuff plus leaderboard is not going to be that helpful, but
yeah, I'm going to look prior to injury history.
So fastball upper 90s, really, with a really good movement profile, and the slider is an out pitch. So D-backs will be seeing mostly fastball slider.
He is coming off a Tommy John surgery at the end of the 2022 season. So yeah, he is coming off some injuries. He, I know Fangraphs have the 22nd prospect in the Yankee system. The Yankee system has obviously been tapped from that Juan Soto trade. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's a bad pitcher. He's probably not going to stick based on the projections.
Not as a starter. He'll probably end up in their bullpen by the end of the year.
I would think so. Just based on his profile as a pitcher, that seems likely. And they were, you know, they're obviously looking at him to start this game because, Gerrit Cole's on the injury list. I think, you know, you don't know what to expect. He's a guy coming off of Tommy John surgery. I don't know how much that affected his prospect ranking. If he's velocity,
I don't think he's a prospect because Fangraphs list his service time is 1 year and 73 days. So we're well past prospect status.
Yeah, probably it is. Yeah, he does have a year service time. But I mean, that's. We know. Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't. You know, I really, I mean, I think the Diamondbacks do well against a pitcher like him.
Actually, I don't think they do well against a pitcher like him.
You don't think so?
Yeah. They faced a pitcher, Ryan Feltner, on Sunday that had a fastball with good carry and a swing and miss slider. And they, even though they jumped for 3 runs in the first inning, they didn't really do anything to him the rest of the way. He gave up 2 more runs because Nolan Jones dropped a lazy fly ball. So yeah, looking at Gil, 17 to 18 inches of induced vertical break and about 4.5 inches arm side movement on the 4-seamer, which is actually good because you want less horizontal movement, but you want a lot more vertical movement when you're talking about 4-seamers. Because that's the best way to miss bats up in the zone. And you also factor in that velocity.
I just see a home run rate of, you know, over 2 and, you know, 2022, and you know, it's just, he's just one of the, you know, his walk rate is definitely very high. It's like, I really don't think his actual, like, how he profiles as a pitcher really matters that much when you're walking everyone and you give up too many home runs. And I think young, hot Diamondbacks team, and, you know, you have, I can see Gurriel and Walker lighting him up.
I mean, the main thing I see with, the main thing I see with Gill is the walk rate's pretty poor up and down. His minor league career, the home run rate, he's the type of pitcher that's kind of hard to square up because of that four-seamer slider combination, but definitely the walk, if the Diamondbacks are patient, I think they can give themselves some opportunities to score via base on balls.
Yeah, I mean,
that's how I see.
I mean, well, absolutely. I mean, this is a team that can take advantage of, you know, stolen bases and speed, and then they're definitely built to take advantage of a guy who walks too many batters. After that, you see a Nestor Cortez, who is coming off of it's not his best season at the very least, and I know he had some injuries last season. In game one of the he pitched the opening day.
Yeah, necessity. He was going to be their number three starter, if I remember correctly. And then Cole went down, and they had Rodon set to be their number two.
Yeah, he went, I have this in front of me, five innings, gave up five hits, four runs, all earned, a home run, two walks, five strikeouts. I mean, not a great start. I think they won in extra innings, if I remember correctly. They didn't lead at all during the game. So, not the greatest start from Nestor.
Yeah, that wasn't.
How do you think
this is a guy that them? It'll be interesting. Like I said, this is a guy who knows how to, Cortez is a guy who knows how to pitch. Give you different looks, different arm angles, different pitches. It's one of those. He's definitely, I guess you can call him the phrase that always comes to mind for most people is crafty lefty. That's what he is. His fastball is more overpowering than you think. He can hit you, attack you with cutters. So that's a big pitch for him. And then the slot. So that's kind of where the D-backs start. It's where you start with those two pitches.
Yeah,
and then once he has you on that fastball, he can get you off balance with the secondary stuff.
I was just going to say that he is definitely the definition of a crafty lefty, and he seems like he has more fun than any other pitcher on the mound half the time. So that I've seen a pitch at the very least. I do think that I think he's probably the most challenging pitcher for the Diamondbacks face. I could be completely wrong about it. I would think. I wonder how Gurriel has done. Can you look that up? How Gurriel's done against Cortez, because they did face each other a lot while he was with Toronto.
That'd be interesting. Like I said, you can just
you're much
something
easier.
For
you're
stat
much,
head. So you're gonna have to buy me a little bit of time.
Yeah. So I would think. I think he does historically own Nestor. If I remember correctly. Carlos Rodon. Rodon. There's a couple ways depends on which Latin American country.
Okay, so Gurriel is 1-for-11 with five strikeouts against Cortez.
1-for-11. Okay, so that's not who I was thinking of then. I may have been thinking of his brother. But I think Nestor is definitely going to be the most challenging pitcher for the Diamondbacks to face in the series. Rodon is not has not been healthy. I mean, did he pitch at all last season? I don't know if he did.
Not really.
He basically was on the DL for the majority of the season last year, and he's coming off injuries. He looked good in spring, from what I've seen in terms of health. I don't think he's going to go very deep into a game. I think this applies to all three starters. It's like I don't expect them to go deep into a game.
Yeah.
Luis Gill, actually, I forgot one thing to say about him is the Diamondbacks have done, always done really poorly against guys who are like, you know, no name starters. It's one of those things historically. It just seems like they've been randomly shut down by a young starter that you've never heard of.
Well, if we look so back at that Rockies year's pitcher, the most success was Feltner.
Yeah. Kind of great example of what I'm talking about. It's like I've never heard of him. You know what? He may do terribly from, I have a terrible season. It just seems one of those things that happen. Rodon, yeah. I think actually, I don't know. I mean, the Diamondbacks, I think, are a better team than the Yankees. That's really what it is.
They're comparable at full strength, but obviously the Yankees aren't at full strength. But then the Yankees don't have their ace. D-backs don't have their closer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing about Rodon is you really can't count on the guy to make more than 20 starts in this season because that's what the track record says. 25. He's only had 2 years in his career with 25 or more starts. And of course, I'm picking that number arbitrarily since that discounts 2021. Of course, you look at Rodon had a pretty decent 2 year run between 21 and 22 where he made 55 starts and had a 2.67 ERA, a 1.55 ERA plus, and the FIP was equally as good. Sub one whip. But in his first year in New York, he was limited to 14 starts.
It's interesting the Yankees, they're just not the team that they used to be. They're not as attractive of a free agent destination. They missed out last, big other than Gerrit Cole. They really have not made they added Marcus Stroman, who we won't see in the series.
Stroman was decent to get for the price they got him for.
And they got, Juan Soto, but that doesn't eliminate the questions that you have. Aaron Judge, is he going to be healthy? You should pretty much assume that, Giancarlo Stanton isn't going to be healthy. He's been healthy so far this year. Both two of them have gotten off to slow starts. If both of those hitters can hit like their full potential, then yeah, it's a scary lineup. But Stanton is not the Stanton of 5-6 years ago.
Yeah, the Yankees in a weird way kind of remind me of the Phillies. They're a team that can slug.
Yeah,
and they have a lights out bullpen. Although I would say Philadelphia has significantly better starting pitching, even if you had the Yankees at full strength, because Wheeler and Cole are comparable. But the 2-3-4 starters on the Phillies are significantly better than what the Yankees have 2-3-4, in my opinion. Depending on which version of Rodon shows up. Now, of course, you had the healthy and 2021-2022 version of Rodon. I think he's a better pitcher than Aaron Nola. But Aaron Nola is one of those few stars you can pencil in for 30 starts a year without even thinking. That's why he got paid the big bucks.
I mean, that's the thing is that, the Yankees actually, when they have a full strength, rotation, it's actually very comparable to the Diamondbacks, if not better. There's some margins to be made for both. I actually give the Diamondbacks, they have a better rotation just merely. It's just from looking at statistically, they're top five, but they go all the starters that we've added, plus the ones we have, go deep into games. I mean, then we have these young prospects or no longer prospects like Fott, Nelson, Jarvis, that could conceivably fill in a role if we need them. And at full strength, I think it's a better team.
At full strength, Fott's your fifth starter. Nelson's probably your eighth inning man. And Jarvis is pitching the seventh.
Yeah. Or he's, your long guy. There's actually a lot of ways you could approach, what to do with all the, but the thing is that, the Diamondbacks have the depth, which a lot of, the Yankees, unfortunately, they don't have the depth of that. That's actually, I think, one of the things that I did not like about them acquiring Juan Soto is they gave up a lot of depth to the Padres in return.
The idea is the Yankees are going to,
which they then traded some of it. Yeah, I think it's a flawed that's just a flawed way of building a team.
It worked against Houston.
It can work.
Outslug your opponent early and then bullpen, use your bullpen as a, and then finish off with your bullpen.
It works when it works, but when it doesn't, it doesn't. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, you have enough hitters like that that are most, you know, where the home runs come in bunches, you know. It's a flawed way of building a team. And, you know, like, yeah, if they're hot in the postseason, sure, you can have a really deep run even win the World Series. Or you can be eliminated in the first round, or, you're, you know, you can have a bad season where, you know, health becomes a factor. And, you know, the Yankees, you know, they've been bad by the health bug. And you know, it's one of those things that they can stay healthy, and this is, you know, get some of their players. I mean, they're missing some key players in their offense aside from that. Like, you have Jason Dominguez, this is an exciting young prospect that
look at the Yankees, they have an exciting young player that I'm not sure if he's still a prospect, but I'm going to double check. And no, we're not talking about Anthony Volpe here. We're talking about Oswaldo Cabrera.
Yes.
Okay, so Cabrera has a year of service time under his name, so he's not even a prospect.
I think Volpe does. They're both young players. They're the equivalent of like Alec Thomas or Corbin Carroll, or young guys. Just call them young guys because they're no longer prospects. Yeah, no, they have some good young players on the team. I like Volpe as a prospect. I like Oswaldo Cabrera.
Yeah, Cabrera's 7 for 16 on the season with 2 homers and a 1346 OPS going into this series.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to, you know, hit like that the whole year, but I think he can be a really good, I think he can be a key component of a dominant Yankees team down the road. He's still really young. I mean, 25.
Yeah. 25, I mean, he's their everyday third baseman.
Well, he's had a long
numbers
road
last year weren't.
He's had numbers a long last year weren't. Road.
Yeah.
He signed in July of 2015. And he
signed at 16 years old.
He signed as a 16-year-old. He's had a long road to the major leagues.
Yeah.
I think that's just, you know, it bears mentioning. You know, he's worked his way up there. Austin Wells has gotten off to a pretty good start. I know people will just, you know, shit on guy, you know, catchers named Austin not being able to hit, but he wants to prove that wrong. From what I've heard, I know someone, I'm pretty sure someone asked him in an interview, you know,
about, well, actually that. Hitting has never been an issue for Austin Wells from what I remember.
And
I watched his college career.
So he's trying to prove that wrong this year. So I think he's a player to watch out. He can be a dangerous batter. Anthony Rizzo, of course. I mean, the real, you can't discount him because his is a concussion related issue. I mean, that could be a long-term effect. It could be something that is, you know, in the past. I don't know if he's the same hitter that he was. He is a good hitter.
No, he's not. He's not the same hitter as he used to be because he's just simply, one, he's old too. And obviously that.
Yeah, he's older too, but the concussion definitely affected him. But it takes a long time to recover from a traumatic brain injury. That's why I'm not completely discounting
the especially age, with the history lot. That, especially with the history that Rizzo has with those type of things.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
So yeah, with all these great left-handed hitters we're naming, I think maybe perhaps the three most important player, two most important players in this series are going to be Joe Mantiply and Kyle Nelson, because they'll be facing those guys with the game on the line.
Yeah. That makes me nervous.
Do you think they'll call up do you think they'll shift the bullpen and they bring up a third left-hander possibly to deal with Soto, Cabrera, Austin Wells?
Who would be the our candidates, you know, in this hypothetical?
So Sol Frank's your only 40-man roster guy. I think Jose Castillo's dealing with an injury right now, so it's going to be a little bit before he's ready if they wanted to call him up. So yes. We did not mention Verdugo, by the way, and we know what Verdugo can do to this team.
I went
just naming another left-hand hitter
as Alex Verdugo, and it's kind of weird that he's from Tucson, where I'm from, and we went to the same high school.
Yeah,
fun fact.
About a decade apart.
A decade apart. I'm pretty sure I know his family. I think I know one of his cousins. We went to the same high school, Soro High School. So that's a neat fun fact. He looks like he's bounced back, and I think it's just funny that he just went from the the Red Sox to the Yankees, and the, you know,
that Yankees, the Red Sox willingly traded a player to the Yankees.
It's so weird. It's just wrong. That's how we know that we're in a parallel reality where everything went wrong, is when the Yankees and Red Sox decided to trade with each other.
Cats and dogs.
Cats and dogs.
So do you think the D-backs so yeah, going back to the left. So going back to the left-handed question, you think they should dump what do you think they should do? You think obviously send down Frias, bring up Sol Frank, or as I like to call him, Full Count Andy.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, what is your nickname for Full Count for Andrew Sol Frank? And then you say, oh, Full Count Andy, and like, it's, why is that? Does that sound like it's a great idea? And I don't necessarily think so. I think
Well, to be fair, it feels like every other bat he goes 3-2 to everyone, to the batter. So that's why the nickname, I think, will stick.
I don't think that that's necessarily a good idea. I don't.
Yeah, like, I prefer 1-2 Andy.
I don't like Joe Mantiply, or like, I mean, just that Kyle Nelson's, I think, yeah, he will be a key part, but Joe Mantiply facing, you know, guys like Juan Soto scares the heck out of me. And Andrew Sol Frank facing Juan Soto is like, okay, well, you know, Juan, you might as well just go to first base already.
Yeah, I think it's Juan Soto versus Andrew Sol Frank's going to be a walk.
That's a walk. Yeah, that doesn't seem like a very good idea. So I think we stick with what we have. I don't even predict any roster move necessarily. Yeah, I mean, what would be your predictions for this series? You think it's going to be a 2-1? That would be my prediction, is a 2-1.
I have the D-backs dropping 2-3 against the Yankees. So they lose Monday, and they'll lose Wednesday.
I'm gonna predict they'll take the first game, they'll lose against Nestor, and they'll win it against Rodon. Or they'll beat all three.
Well, remember, Nestor's going up against Gallen, and it depends on how you view Gallen's first start.
Well, in that case, I'm going to predict this. You know, actually, I think if Gallen takes that one, I could see. That's who's going tomorrow against Gill?
That's going to be Nelson. Ryan Nelson.
Yeah, that one could go either way. I think I would take Gallen over Nestor, and I would take Merrill Kelly over Carlos Rodon. So I'm gonna go the other way. I'm gonna say 2-3 the other way.
All right. So yeah. So going into my losing series thing, I think Nelson's gonna get jumped by the Yankees because unless you believe that changeup is a legit weapon, he just doesn't match up well against them. That's my opinion. And plus, like you said, the D-backs might have trouble with Gil adjusting to Gil's fastball slider combo. So I can see that. That's the game I have penciled as the game I expect the D-backs to lose. And then, as you mentioned, Wednesday's game with Merrill Kelly and Carlos Rodon, that's going to be the game that decides the series, in my opinion.
I agree with that. I think that
actually, I take that back. Wait, no, yeah, I'm right. I'll stick with it. Yeah.
Yeah, this game I'm gonna stick with. I think the Ryan Nelson, Luis Gil, that actually could go both ways. I would take Ryan Nelson over Luis Gil, but that's only, you know, familiarity bias. Gallen, I think, I really think he's a better pitcher than Nestor Cortez. He didn't have his best stuff though on opening day, but that's I'm not gonna read into that. And like you said, that Carlos Rodon and Merrill Kelly could go either way. I mean, they're kind of like pretty comparable. They're both at full strength and full health.
Two completely different schools of pitching when they're both at the top of their game. Yeah. Carlos Rodon relies on strikeouts. Merrill Kelly relies on, I guess you can call it, almost hard hit contact.
Yeah.
Where the balls are hit like 90 to 95 and it's right at somebody kind of thing. Yeah. Kelly's a pitch to contact type of guy, although he's added more swing and miss to his game the last couple of years.
They're polar opposites. Like, really, they really are. They're polar opposites in terms of just who they are as pitchers. It's gonna be an interesting series. I'm excited. It's always, I you know, like I said, like hopefully Diamondbacks fans show up for this one so we can drown out the Yankees fans. You know, it's never a good look to have opposing team's fans in your stadium.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Show up for this.
By the way, for a full season, Merrill Kelly strikeout rate last year was 26%, just under 26%. His previous high before then, 22%. So if he can actually sustain the swing and miss ability, I think Merrill Kelly could actually have a better year than DeGallen.
I actually think he will. I'm going to predict that he will because they actually weren't that far apart necessarily, other than in innings pitched. If he had pitched as many innings as Zach Gallen, I think he'd be a more valuable pitcher. And I think it's possible.
Remember, Merrill Kelly was down for 4 weeks with a blood clot in his calf last year. Of course, one of those weeks was the ulcer break, so it didn't affect his number of starts as much as it could have.
I mean, it would have been much closer if he hadn't missed those 3 weeks. But I mean, he looked really sharp in that game too.
Yeah,
like he had a really great start. Ryan Nelson, he hasn't pitched yet, so you can't really say. I mean,
he hasn't pitched in a major league game setting since the 22nd.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
So he had to throw a sim game because originally he was scheduled to pitch against Cleveland on the 26th, but the March 15th game got rained out and it pushed everyone a day back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing is that does factor in my opinion, like go both ways with the Gill and Nelson he hasn't pitched in a major league game in quite some time. I think he made some real progress during the spring. I think that it's I could see him faring well against this Yankees lineup just as much as I could see them teeing off of him and hitting him out of the game by the third, fourth inning.
Yep, we'll just have to find out. Game one is later tonight, so this is getting recorded. This will be posted Monday afternoon. And first pitch for game one will be at 6:40 Arizona time. So not too long after this comes out. So any final words on this? Any final thoughts on this series?
I think this is a much better test than the Rockies. You can't really see what you have. You can only tell so much from, facing a terrible team. This Yankees team coming in hot, it's a much better test. There are a lot more established players. I mean, regardless of how you feel about how Anthony Rizzo is, I mean, he's been around forever. He's a major league ball player, just as much as Aaron Judge, Juan Soto are. Gleyber Torres, we forgot about, still very young. So the team's first real challenge. I think this is going to be a good litmus test for how this season goes.
I agree. Thanks for everyone for watching. And in a community post, we'll let you know if there's going to be post game or not. Most likely leaning away from doing post game for the Yankees series if I'm actually going to the games to cover Monday, Tuesday, and then obviously I'm preoccupied Wednesday for that one. So until then.